world's on fire, our culture is disintegrating.
Hey, pass the salt.
It's time. It's time.
Hey, you, pass the salt.
You know what, why it's disintegrating? Because we're jellyfish.
Pass the salt, will you?
Pass the salt.
Pass the salt, amigo.
It's time. It's time.
I think they could give us a new name. I believe we are Evan Jellyfish.
Hey, will you pass the salt?
Pass the salt.
We need salt over here.
It's time for Pass the Salt.
Pass the salt.
But we like to share the gospel without any backbone to it, see?
The views, opinions, and seemingly outrageous comments expressed on this program are based on the Holy Spirit leading of a man called Coach.
I gotta ask you this out there, Christian America.
It's time for Pass the Salt with a Coach, Dave Dobenmeyer.
Hey, good morning, folks. I'm starting to feel, I guess it's not jet lag. It wasn't like I flew halfway across the world. You know, it's pretty amazing. I had my butt in the sand at noon on the ocean, not yesterday. Do a little bit of swimming in the ocean there in Venice, Florida. And by 5:30, I was in my car at Columbus International Airport flying home. Only in today's world can that happen. Butt in the sand at noon at home at 5:30. That's what happened to us yesterday. A little bit recovered. It was a draining long weekend. And I don't know how the show went yesterday. I just kind of walked through that thing. There's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of great stuff. And we're glad you're joining us today. I'm going to shut up because I really, really want to dive into this. Many of you are aware of Scott Shara and his Our Amazing Grace, his daughter who was allegedly, I guess got to use that word, Scott, allegedly murdered by the medical system. One of the first ones, really, and actually this is the first breakthrough trial that actually made it and got some coverage, long trial. And I've casually known Scott for probably a couple years now. By casually, I mean, you know, we're not best buddies. We don't hang out together because he's in Wisconsin and I'm in Ohio. Otherwise, we probably would hang out together. And Scott, one of the most amazing things that I ever saw, Scott, I said this the other day on the show, my goodness, brother, was your gracious interview after the verdict came down. It was one of the most, brother, that was so profound. That you glorified the Lord, and I know that you're mad and you wanted to spit and you wanted to flip over a table. That's what I'd have wanted to do. And look back at all the money that you'd spent and say, what did I do? Where are you, Lord? How did this happen? That wasn't your attitude at all, man. And it was unbelievable to watch. And so I'm going to try to shut up a little bit, Scott. I'm going to bring you in. I'm going to talk. I'm going to let you talk. And we're going to get maybe as many questions as we want to. You tell the story. Most people watching our show know what happened with Grace. They know the whole thing. So we don't have to bring them up to date that it was your Down syndrome daughter that was taken to the hospital. Yada. Most people know all that, Scott. So just for the sake of time, because we want to get in as much as possible. God bless you, man. Thanks for joining us, Scott. Tell us what the heck happened, bud.
Well, that's a great question. I mean, when you zoom out and, I've had now a few days to process the trial. What I want to share relative to the trial is, the jury only deliberated for 90 minutes in a case that lasted one day short of 3 weeks. And our team had people who watched it have talked with me that have watched the entire trial. The entire trial was live streamed, which, that was, as we got into it, that became one of the goals. We felt that if we could get the trial live streamed, those with ears to hear, would have a chance to get out of the system. So, in that light, we had a better case, better witnesses, a better team, better experts. Everything was in our favor. And, the defense, through their experts, we had two experts, they had six, said that by being in a hospital, you are giving implied consent. And the drugs that were used to euthanize Grace were normal in an ICU, so no informed consent is necessary.
Wow.
You wrap your head around that. So that becomes, what people should expect if they go to a hospital.
So, Scott, if you go to the hospital, they basically can do whatever they want to as long as they're saying they're trying to make you better.
Well, that's exactly right. And the judge ruled against our battery claim in that light. In fact, when I testified as a rebuttal witness on Tuesday, the last day of trial testimony, we brought in the record that showed that the hospital fraudulently got our general consent, our meaning mine and Grace's. And the document specifically showed that roughly 15 minutes after Grace and I got into the emergency room, they received oral consent from Grace, not me, oral consent from Grace, which is completely ridiculous.
Well, first of all, do they have a record of that, Scott? Can they just say she told us to do it? Were they able to? Is that the standard?
Well, that's what's in the medical records. So, yeah, I mean, that's the standard. We thought that by showing that, it would be so, people would see it as so ridiculous that they would see that the hospital is in the business of fraud. And, you know, that was the very first document. And, you know, of course, they never talk with Grace. I was in the room with Grace, and it would be ridiculous to even ask Grace for general consent. I mean, she had Down syndrome. You know, that it's just complete foolishness. Yeah, I want to just go on, and then, you know, people can, you know, the questions would be fantastic, but I just want to still summarize the case. You know, so they also, because the jury sided in favor of the hospital 11-1, we only had one juror on our side. So what they agreed to is that doctors don't even need to inform the family of overdoses. Grace had two overdose events, October 7th and 8th, before the third overdose on October 13th. And that third overdose is what killed Grace. And then what is the most surprising is that their experts stated that a doctor can unilaterally place a DNR on a patient, do not resuscitate order on a patient, without consent, without a witness, without a signature, and without a DNR bracelet. And the jury bought that argument. Hard to grasp. I mean, they, you know, people don't realize that every single one of them is either going to be disabled or elderly someday and taken advantage of in the hospital system. Anyway, the jury decided in favor of the defense, and that decision should scare anyone with ears to hear. And in that vein, I can see God's purpose in a loss, because a loss will save more people than a win. And a win, you know, people would get comfortable thinking, oh yeah, well, that's great. There is still justice. And, you know, this is an antichrist legal system. There's no such thing as justice in that system.
Amen, brother. Amen. So Scott, if I interrupt for a living, so people out there think I'm rude. I'm not trying to be rude. Okay. I try to think for all the people that are out here. Let's get this off the table right away. People say, well, that was a rigged jury. That thing was rigged. What do you think happened with the jury, Scott? Just from, again, just your personal opinion, the evidence that was presented was so overwhelming. Experts say they shouldn't have done this. They shouldn't have done this. They needed to do this, and they didn't do this. What do you think happened with that jury, that you could only get one person that said that they mistreated her?
I think that the jury represents our country. So one person out of 12 is 8%. You know, is 8% of the population truly awake to what's going on? Probably. And so I think the jury simply represented the population. You know, think through, if the average age of the jury was 50 years old, they've had 50 years of programming. So it shouldn't surprise anybody that a jury would go that way. I mean, it surprises us because we're awake, and we, you know, it was obvious that we presented a better case. And, you know, I'm trying to be objective. Of course, I have a bias, but I'm trying to be objective. I mean, I sat in all the testimony. I sat down with the legal team every night after each day of testimony. And you know, we were all shocked.
Would you sit down after the trial, you know, it was over for the day, sit down, boy, we got him today. Boy, it's looking to, was that kind of when you, some of those experts, Scott, were so damaging to the defense. It's hard to believe that they would ignore it. What was your attitude through that whole thing? I'm certainly praying, Lord, whatever, right?
Well, we did sit, I mean, the legal team, I rented a home for them in Appleton, so that was a big home, so they could all work together as a team. I was with them every single night till about 11 o'clock at night after the courtroom work, and, you know, virtually every single day. I mean, we had to prep, I mean, so you don't get to have time to celebrate, but, you know, we did think that every day, even the worst day, that we still had the edge. With every day, some days, you know, were overwhelming in our favor. Like when Dr. Burdine testified, I mean, he was a fantastic expert for us, and he really nailed it. You know, so there was days where we were really excited and days where even when their best experts testified, our cross-examination showed that they had biases that we thought the jury would easily see, like AI. Two of their experts were AI experts, where they want the whole medical industrial complex to be driven by AI. I mean, that should scare people. But yet the jury did not see that.
So, Scott, we got to get this whole picture, folks. So there would be testimony against that they didn't have a DNR, that nobody gave permission, that they overdosed her, basically, is what they do. And Scott, what would be the defense's defense? What would they say? I mean, when it came to the point where they really did overdose her, would they just ignore that? What would be their defense?
Well, it's interesting because every single point they would counter with a version of the truth, which a version of the truth means it's a lie. And so, for example, you know, Dr. Burdine, our expert, testified that it was the single most egregious act that he's ever seen in 46 years of experience to give morphine to a patient without a pulse and without a blood pressure. And the medical records show that Grace had no blood pressure at 6:09 p.m. Well, they gave her morphine at 6:15 p.m. And so when it was their chance to defend themselves, they said, oh, it was just the blood pressure cuff just needed to be adjusted. And, you know, the doctor said he touched Grace's fingernails. So there was obviously a pulse. And, you know, so when the medical records were in their favor, they agreed with them. But when they weren't, they just said, well, the medical records are wrong. And again, the jury bought that.
Did the judge play it straight, Scott?
Yeah, that's really a great question. I was reading some online comments this morning. I don't spend a lot of time on social media, but somebody did a write-up that I started reading this morning. And first I'll just say at the end, and then I'll answer your question more specifically. At the end, if people watched after the verdict, the judge said that the world was a better place with Grace in it. I was very kind, and I walked up to him at the end, and I shook his hand. And what I said to him, I got to back everybody up to May 19th and 20th, because that was when the pretrial hearing happened. And this is when we were arguing over if the trial is going to be live streamed, how are we going to do that. And the judge said during that pretrial hearing that I can only control what happens in this courtroom. And he was familiar with our billboard campaign. He said, if I make a decision that Mr. Shera doesn't like, he could put a picture of me on a billboard. So anyway, that with that backdrop, I shook his hand at the end and I said, I really appreciate the work that you did as a judge. And I want to let you know that I'm not going to be putting up a billboard with your picture on it. And so he got a chuckle out of that and we parted ways. But so then was he straight? You know, we believe he made a fundamental error with the denial of the battery claim. So why do I say that? For a battery claim, you need two things. You need to have no consent for the action and no desire for the action. So the overdose and the DNR, obviously we had no desire for those actions. And so then regarding the no consent, he sided with the implied consent of being in a hospital. So you don't have to give literal consent. He said there's an implied consent. So we think that was a mistake. We have multiple briefs. We had the best legal minds in the country working on that battery claim. We filed a 17-page brief the night before that he dismissed the battery claim. And we brought in a separate attorney just to argue that claim that day. And we ended up losing that. The second thing that I think that he missed, which is more substantial than the battery claim, is he denied our motions in limine. Motions in limine were heard during the May 19th and 20th pretrial. And what those are filings by both the defense and the plaintiff to limit certain testimony. And so we filed motions in limine to limit testimony for the things that I have learned subsequent to Grace's death, like the incentives for ventilators, how the government was involved with the COVID PSYOP. You know, all these things I studied and researched subsequent to Grace's death. So they had nothing to do with what happened with Grace in the 7 days in the hospital.
So they wouldn't you couldn't present that as evidence.
Well, we didn't want to. So we filed motions in limine to leave that out because we felt that if they pegged me as a conspiracy theorist, that would go against us with the jury. And the judge allowed that in. And so there was a lot of testimony where the defense attorneys were asking me those type of questions to paint me as a nut job. And, you know, I was glad to, you know, from the perspective of the world and trying to help people wake up in the world, I didn't mind that it was brought in and I was able to defend it. And what was interesting, Dave, was when there was a couple of times where they asked me questions about, for example, one was toxilizumab, which is an emergency use authorization drug with a $22,000 payday for one dose during COVID. Wow. And they asked me about that. And I started to explain where the information that I received was from, and it was from the New England Journal of Medicine. Well, then the defense objects. So I could not quote out of the New England Journal of Medicine because I'm not an expert. Wow. Similarly, they asked me a question about Down syndrome, and I was quoting out of the American Journal of Genetic Medicine, and they stopped that too. So I couldn't quote, that would give me credibility on the stand to quote out of those journals, but they objected and the judge sustained the objection. So anyway, that answers your question. That's a long answer to your question.
No, that's a good one. We're trying to cover a lot of space here, Scott. So Look, let's take 5 minutes there for those who are just tuning in right now. Tell us a story, Scott. What happened? How'd she get in the hospital? As I tell people on our show, tell us the story, not your life story, but just a brief overview of that period of time when she got sick and you took her to the hospital.
Well, this was, you know, I have to start with my attitude at that time. So my attitude would have been a person that's a conservative with a healthy distrust for the government, distrust for the system. But I still thought hospitals were a safe zone.
What year is this, Scott? What year
was this? This is 2021, October of 2021. So okay. The whole COVID thing's going on at that time. I bought into the fear propaganda, although what I had done differently, I didn't buy into the government narrative. I bought into the less evil narrative from the frontline COVID critical care doctors. So we had ivermectin, vitamins, nebulizer, pulse oximeter, all those things at home to prepare our family. A lot of people did that, I realized, but there's nothing wrong with that. And that God doesn't judge the action, he judges the heart. But where I was at is once Grace tested positive for COVID, which we tested her because we were going to go to a wedding on October 1st. And so we tested her, she tested positive. So now we started this protocol. Well, the thing so I made two fundamental mistakes that I want to share because it will help people. Number one is that, so why did we not go to the wedding that day on October 1st? You know, Grace just had a cold. She was fine. If we wouldn't have tested her for COVID, we would have went to the wedding because she was fine. So I did that because of the collectivism lie of our civic duty. So the civic duty is a lie, and we should not buy into that argument.
The civic duty, meaning Scott, you had to bring her home because you didn't want to make others sick, right?
Exactly. And that is part of that's part of the trap of Satan's system. To get us into this business of collectivism. God is an individualist. He's not a collectivist. Amen. And that's a big piece of it. So now ultimately Grace's oxygen drops to 88% on October 6th. The protocol said if it drops below 94%, it's an emergency, take her to the hospital. So we did. And you know, ultimately I checked her in under the premise that the ER doctor said, we'll do this as a precautionary, put Grace on oxygen and steroid for 3-4 days. And so I thought, well, that's fine. You know, but again, here's the main take home from that decision, Dave. It was, I was relying on the less evil, which is relying on Satan versus relying on God. And that was the second mistake that I made. And Grace is not here because of that mistake. And you know, that's
the lesser of two evils is still evil, right, Scott?
It's still evil, right. And so ultimately, you know, Grace then was put on a sedation med called Presidex. they consider that normal in the ICU, and it probably is normal in the ICU, but with, you know, every single drug has side effects. And so, for example, we used in the trial, we explained this, that if you gave your son or daughter an aspirin and they had an allergic reaction, would you give them a second aspirin? And, you know, if you did, you're a fool. But then if they had a second reaction, would you give them a third aspirin? And that's what happened with Grace. It wasn't aspirin, it was Precedex. So Grace had a medical reaction to Precedex, and Precedex has umpteen side effects, but I'm just going to ramble through the 12 side effects that Grace had from Precedex, and they completely ignored them. And, you know, so then they gave her a dose the second time. She had another reaction that nearly killed her on October 8th. And then the third time it killed her on October 13th. So here's in the medical records, the side effects of Precedex that Grace had are respiratory depression, hypoxia, agitation, acidosis, hypotension, fever, blood pressure fluctuation, anxiety, delirium, sepsis, acute respiratory distress syndrome, and cardiac arrest.
This is from the medicine.
This is from the medicine, yes. And they ignored all those side effects. And, you know, the excuse they used at trial, I mean, we brought this into trial. And the excuse they used is, well, that's why she's in the ICU, so we can monitor those things and react if there's a problem. Well, I mean, they didn't react, like, they just reacted with blinders on.
I won't mention the name, a pretty well-known doctor said to me, I said, how come the doctors are doing this? She said, Coach, they just read the protocol. They don't think for themselves. This is what the protocol says. They follow the protocol because they don't want to get sued. And they know they'll be protected if they follow the protocol from on high. Would you agree with that, Scott?
Well, it's even worse than that, because that's 100% true with specific protocols. So specific protocols are called standards of care, and care should be in quotes. So if they follow the standard of care, for example, for cancer and give you chemo, which has a 97.9% kill rate, and you die from the treatment, they cannot be sued because they followed that standard of care. Well, then there's the standards of care that are subjective. So that's an objective standard of care, so they can't be sued. The subjective standard of care, and that's why they bring in experts, is they had six experts testify that virtually everything that happened in that ICU room was perfect. And I'm not joking. And so then it becomes our expert that says they violated the standard of care versus their experts that say they didn't violate the standard of care. So then you have this argument.
He said, she said, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Great question, Dave.
Amen. Scott, this very personal question, but it's important. We want to help you here. How much does this cost you, Scott?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. All the bills aren't in yet, but you know, we have about, before the trial was about $825,000. It will be about $1.1 million when it's all done.
Unbelievable. Hey, folks, ask yourself this question. Is it justice when you got to pay for it? Is it really, really, do we really have a justice system when you have to pay $1 million to defend yourself? By the way, while I'm thinking of it real quick, website's up there. It would be nice for all of you to go there and donate. Try to make Scott healthy here. I mean, if I had to come up with $1 million like that. And friends, let me say this. This is the second child Scott's lost. Yeah. So this wound runs really, really deep in this family. Probably more than we can even understand. And I would just be honored, those out there, if you could just throw some money in there to help Dolly. A lot of expenses, a lot of things going on. So, Scott, I'm going to open it up here, get some folks in there, because I know there's a lot of questions. So, old football coach here, right, Scott? I'm in the middle of a football game. I make a decision, and the game goes the wrong way because I made the – daggone it! I knew it at the time. I shouldn't have done that, right? I knew it at the time. So, Scott, if you had it all to do over, what's a mistake you think, I shouldn't have done that? What do you think?
Yeah, I've thought about that a bit. You know, I felt that we left it all on the battlefield. So, I mean, we were called to do something that was impossible. Yep. My sense is you know, I have never worked so hard on one thing in my life. I've started three businesses from scratch, so I know what hard work is. This was harder than all of that. I've never worked so hard on something. So I felt I left it all on the battlefield. If I would have replayed something, now that I know that we lost, what would I have done different? Yeah. I would have, when I had my opportunity on the stand, I would have let her rip a few, I would have let a few more things rip versus being, you know, measured. I was measured on the stand based on the advice of the attorneys.
Sure. One to play the part of a nice guy, right? And yeah, you know, we know they didn't mean to do this, all that kind of stuff, rather than throwing a temper tantrum. See, I can't tell you the number of times in a football game, after the game's over, I'm so mad at myself because I knew right then I should have done it. And I right, never forgave myself the rest of the time. So, second of all, third of all, fourth of all, Scott, listen, brother. I've met Scott. I don't know Scott. We don't eat hamburgers together. He's in Wisconsin. I'm in Ohio. Scott, your response, your Christian response, brother, before the media. Man, that humbled me, Scott, more than you can ever know. Because I'd have been flipping over tables and throwing mud pies, and I'd have been screaming about the judicial system and all of it, brother. And I'm telling you, man, I don't know where you got the grace to be able to do that, but that was an incredible thing. And I want you to know that your daughter was watching, brother, and she is so proud of the defense you gave her, the way that you fought for her. You left it all on the field, buddy, and that's really all you can do. Son, hold your ears. Sometimes you get shitty referees. You know what I'm talking about, friends? It's just. Did you ever want to do that? Did you ever want to stand up in the courtroom and say, "Kill that juror! Get him out of here!" Right? Because really, hey Scott, we talked last week. Let me throw this at you. You know the Constitution guarantees us. It's kind of a false narrative. A jury of your peers.
Yeah, that's a misnomer.
Were those your peers on that? They just happened to all be from the same town, and maybe they were all whatever. But were those Bible believing, God fearing people sitting on that jury, Scott?
I thought through that also. It definitely was not a jury of my peers. A jury of my peers, we would have won.
Yeah.
So it was a jury of citizens of Outagamie County, Wisconsin. And, you know, that's the only thing that we all had in common. You know, you mentioned about the grace at the press conference. And I just want to share where that comes from. Because, you know, this lawsuit really, the mindset for the lawsuit was given to me on October 17th of 2021. Grace died on October 13th of 2021. I went into a hospital on October 16th, 3 days later. And on October 17th, the hospital turned me around and I was sitting in that room processing what's going on. And that's when God broke me. And that's why I was able to do that. You know, you think, oh, how could you possibly do that? And the answer to that question is I can't. Nobody can do that. Nobody can be graceful when you get ruled against. Nobody can be graceful against the doctor and nurse who murdered their daughter. I mean, you can't.
And they're lying about it, right? And they're lying.
Right. You can't be graceful in those situations. It's impossible. But God's, that's why we have the gospel message. He does the impossible. And he broke me so that I would have a spirit of forgiveness toward the doctor and nurse. And that is why we were able to file a lawsuit. I met both the doctor and nurse during the depositions. For the first time, and I shook both of their hands during the depositions and told them I forgave them. But that wasn't because I did it; it's because God did it. And yeah, so that's why the press conference went the way it did. I mean, he's been preparing me for 3.5 years for that press conference.
Scott, do you think I'm Jack McCarthy will come to you right here next after this question? Hey, this tough question, but I'm going to ask it, Scott. Do you think it was because Grace was a useless eater? Do you think that factored into it at all, Scott?
I do. I was asked that in my deposition. It didn't come up in the trial. You know, I don't know why. I'm surprised they didn't bring it up in the trial. But I do think that. And I think it for several reasons. It isn't just because it's my opinion. When I studied things after Grace's death, you know, first the records, the 22 doctors' reports referenced that Grace had Down syndrome 36 different times. furthermore, in the records, it says that she was not a VIP patient.
Wow.
And then, you know, zooming out, 90% of Down syndrome people are murdered in the womb. So there's an attitude.
God. That's a boom.
Yeah, there's a boom. And then, you know, in COVID, the final leg of that stool is during COVID. And this is, I was starting to quote this during the trial when the objection came. And the odds of having an illegal do not resuscitate order on your chart if you had Down syndrome during COVID, this has already been studied, it was 630% higher than somebody without Down syndrome.
Wow. I don't mean to laugh. Huh? It is, folks, what a web we weave when first we practice deceiving. Okay, now listen, folks. Tell us your story, not your life story, okay? We want to get a lot of questions in there. Jack, come on in.
Hi, Scott. Good morning.
Hi, Jack.
Thank you.
Jackson, Maine. State of Maine.
We know each other.
Okay.
I thank you, Scott, because this is the glass is half full or half empty. What you just did was horrific to do. But what you proved was the tyranny of the minority. And we can use that. And we talk on here all the time about staying in your lane. Dave and I would have been in jail for what happened.
Yeah.
What you did was phenomenal.
It was.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, Jack. Say hi to Mercy for me, please. I miss her. Jack's daughter, Mercy, is just a gift.
I'm still pissed off about that. Let justice go down like a mighty river. We need justice, man. Oh, God bless
she'll
you.
Give call, Scott. She'll give you a call and give you a hug, Scott.
Well, thank you, Jack. Appreciate it.
Amen. Go ahead. Come on in, Roger.
Yeah. I was called to jury once for a murder trial, and I was once one cut away from being on the jury. And the cut that happened that got me off was they asked me if I would support the death penalty. And I said, yeah. Right after that, they cut me. Okay. My question is, the judges can have a lot of sway on how the jury comes.
Mm.
And they feel through the questions. Were you allowed to be there when they picked the jury?
Good yeah, question, Roger. That's really a great question, Roger. Yeah, so that the jury process is called voir dire, and it took an entire day. We started at... I think we started at 9 o'clock that morning. We didn't get done till 5:30, and we hired a jury consultant. You know, the voir dire process, you know, it seemed fair, you know, for in that system, you just always have to couch everything as in their system.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was able to participate in the entire process, and it's interesting. You know, that was an interesting day. I've never done that before. And, you know, ultimately, we really thought that we had a positive thing going into the jury because when there was some replacement, you know, so what happens is they have this box where the first set of jurors are in. And, you know, as they get taken out because of biases or whatever, then new people replace them. And because of the publicity with this case, they started with 114 potential jurors.
Wow. Peers, right?
Yeah, supposed peers. You know, and typically that's not the case. I mean, they don't do, you know, that many, but because we had so much pretrial publicity, they thought they needed a larger jury pool. Anyway, at the last cut, four people came in and, you know, they started asking questions, and these four individuals all knew that COVID was a psyop. And so then the defense had to use all four of their strikes on those four people. And so we thought that was a benefit at the time, but you know, obviously we were wrong. But I mean, a different jury could have come up with a different result, of course. But
Scott,
I mean, again,
at the end of the day, what was it the jury believed?
Well, what they believed is that you are giving implied consent, so there's no informed consent necessary in a hospital. That doctors and nurses are always doing their best, and even to the extent that they can put a DNR on somebody unilaterally.
The doctors
without
were just
consent.
Doing the right thing, right? The doctors just cared, and they were just doing the right thing. And if you were a doctor, you would have done it too. That's kind of the attitude that come at Scott.
Exactly. You know, we thought that the tide had turned a bit. You know, just when you see what's going on in the media, we thought, well, there's enough going on in the media that the tide has turned with this. But I mean, it clearly hasn't. I mean, the programming, you're not going to change 50 years of programming in 1 year of media exposing exposing the COVID jab and all the things that are going on in the media right now. But you know, part of it is the media that I listen to is not the same media they listen to.
Isn't that the truth? Let's get a doctor in here. Dr. Paul, come on in. Hey folks, tell us your story, not your life story. All right, let's go.
Thanks, Scott. God
Boy, bless. It is really great to see you, Paul.
Thanks. Anyway, had it been malice in this. I don't know if you understand, but as a doc, I've seen this before. They kicked me out of hospitals 28 years ago when I called out one of my colleagues for doing similar things to a patient. So, I mean, I guess that what I'm trying to ask, Scott, is did you see any malice in that doctor or the nurse? You get a sense of it, right? There's a part of them that wanted this to happen.
Yeah.
Right?
So let me throw this here, Paul. Hey, Scott, do you think they gave Grace the same treatment that they would have given Taylor Swift?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, I don't. And I think it's in part because Grace was not a VIP. It's in part because I was asking too many questions. I was not sufficiently docile. And so I was asking too many questions. So they developed that attitude. Furthermore, they referenced that we're Christian in the medical records. That seemed to be a bias. The larger bias was that Grace was not vaccinated. That was in the medical records. In fact, the COVID expert at St. Elizabeth's Hospital, the infectious disease expert, said that he, in his medical record, says that she would not be here if she'd been fully vaccinated.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so those are things that did not come out at the trial. And like Dave, if you could replay it, you know, I wouldn't, you know, those things, you knew you're going to lose ahead of time, you might as well let it out there because then the world's at least going to see it. Right?
That's right. That's why you had to flip some tables over, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. See, that was my whole coaching career again. I would always hate myself after it when I didn't go on 4th-and-1.
That's right on.
Yeah, always. That's hindsight. Joe Allen, come on in, then Angie.
Scott, this is horrific for any parent, what you went through. But like you're saying, there's a chance of letting this out there. Has there been thought about JFK or RFK with he's going to HSS? Going through wrongful death actions with him or give him your case?
It's a great question, Joe. He's very familiar with our case.
Good.
People don't realize, you know, how he reached out to me. So I'll share a couple of things. He reached out to me in April of 22. I was sitting at a dinner table. We were doing a rally for Grace in Appleton, and he all of a sudden he emailed me. You know, RFK Jr. emails me and asked me if we needed help with an attorney. And he was going to come on my podcast before he ran for president. And then once that happened, he didn't, you know, he couldn't come on my podcast. So, I mean, he's familiar with the case. where does he fit in all of this? I mean, that's, you know, my opinion is that, you know, he's in the system. That system we should not be relying on. However, you know, if he takes some interest in it and wants to push it further, you know, my participation wouldn't be because I believe in that system. My participation with him would be based on we have a responsibility. You know, our family's been called under Genesis 50:20, which Dave quoted at the beginning of the show, what you meant for evil, God meant for good, the saving of many lives, which is happening today. So by having RFK take on some of the responsibility with Grace's case, representing 1.2 million hospital murders during COVID, it'd be fantastic to help people wake up. Then we also are going through right now, there's going to be a movie on our case. In fact, the man filming the movie is coming here. That's why I'm not doing this show today from my office where I typically do my podcast, because he's coming here today to finish up the last day of filming for the movie. And he knows the several of the people at HHS and thinks that once he's got the movie set up, he can share it with them and, you know, potentially get some traction that way to help wake people up.
Scott, did you hear from the big Christian law firms willing to defend you?
Not at all. I mean, I wrote to, you know, at the beginning, I wrote to all of them. It was all crickets. Nobody was interested. I would, you know, I don't know that they've been bought. You know, they may have, you know, there's a lot of people who've been bought. We just don't, we don't recognize that. You know, it's rare to have a Coach Dave. It's rare to have a Grace's dad. We're, you know, we're self-funding. You know, nobody owns us. You know, all of those things. We had two different organizations that wanted to fund our lawsuit, and I turned them both down because I needed to be responsible for the choices. I could not be controlled. You know, they would have wanted to settle, you know, and so we said right at the beginning, we're not settling. What's the reason? Well, the purpose of the lawsuit was not to win millions. We had already said if we won, we're not even taking the money. And we wanted to have the whole thing be above reproach, but we wanted it to go to the jury. And, you know, that's because that's what we were called to do. We weren't called to settle.
Oh, my goodness. Angie, come on in.
Good morning. Well, first off, Scott, I just want to say how sorry I am for the loss of your beautiful girl. I was in hospital neonatal and pediatric nursing for over 30 years. And I left during the COVID era because of what I began to witness in the ethical treatment of patients. Like literally the entire system, I was completely exposed as evil and wicked. And I just want to kind of preface this because part of my job for almost 20 years, Scott, I was a hospital administrative nursing supervisor. And I was in a huge pediatric hospital. Like it's a 500 plus bed hospital. And one of the things I feel like was completely neglected in your case was what we call the hospital chain of command of authority, where you look at, if you have a disgruntled parent or a person that's concerned or whatever, you go through the chain of command until you reach higher echelons of information. It's not just a doctor making a decision, it's actually a group of people making a decision, like an ethics panel, okay? So I guess my first question is, did you have legal guardianship and a legal medical power of attorney over Grace?
Okay, so you've got, what is your first name? I forgot.
Angie.
Okay, so first of all, Angie, you leaving the medical profession because you saw it as corrupt, I mean, you should be complimented because that was rare. Most people would never do that because the paycheck is more important. So I'm very impressed with that. Second of all, the idea of the ethics committee, before I was taken out by an armed guard, I requested a meeting with the unit supervisor and the attending doctor. They did not honor that request. That was brought up in trial. One of our experts testified that violated the standard of care. Again, the jury did not buy that argument. And then the third question is regarding guardianship, power of attorney. So Grace was very high functioning. So when somebody turns 18, when they're disabled, you have three choices in Wisconsin. Either you can do nothing, you can become a guardian, or you can do what's called supported decision making. So we did supported decision making. We chose to not be guardians. With supported decision making, then we had the medical power of attorney. So yes, we were medical power of attorney over Grace.
This and that, gosh, Scott, this just flipping reeks. Like I said, within the chain of command, and I've been working with Spencer and Jared because I'm starting a new, an entire new business. It's called the Consumer Nurse Advocate, and it's for these kinds of cases because people don't understand there is a legal chain of command inside a hospital. That if you're not getting what you want from the nurse, you go to her supervisor, you go to her charge nurse. If that doesn't work, you go to the nurse manager. If that doesn't work, you go to the hospital supervisor. If that doesn't work, you go to the chief nursing officer. So there is a chain of command that they should be required to do to give you a voice and get many eyes on the situation. Was this a small county hospital, or how big was this hospital?
No, it's part of the Ascension hospital system. And you know, it's huge. There's 150 hospitals in the Ascension system. Uh-huh. It's the largest Catholic hospital in the United States. It's huge. Yeah. Interestingly, in that Ascension system, I'll just share this with you. You know, they've essentially purchased the Catholic banner for advertising. And I'm going to read this from their website. They say, here's what they say under their mission. It says, rooted in the loving ministry of Jesus as healer, we commit ourselves to serving all persons with special attention to those who are poor and vulnerable. Our Catholic health ministry is dedicated to spiritually centered holistic care, which sustains and improves the health of individuals and communities. We are advocates for a compassionate and just society through our actions and our words. Yes, that's their mission. Obviously, they did not fulfill their mission. And, you know, that's because they purchased that Catholic logo as part of the marketing arm of Ascension Hospital
System. Yeah, that's the mission they send to their donors.
Yeah.
That's not the mission they send to their patients, is it? It's a little bit different. Laura Ann, come on in quickly.
Good morning. I'm going to follow up after Angie. This is my daughter, Hope. My daughter's name is Hope, and I live in Illinois. I don't live too far from you. I live outside of Chicago, and being on the spectrum and everything. So my heart breaks for you and your wife on a lot of levels. But following up with having the power of attorney for her health, for her finances, because she's high functioning. It's like my daughter has Asperger's. She's more on that lane of it. When I advocated for my mom when she was super sick, and I went up through the chain of command, just like Angie said. I went to the top of the hospital, you know, here in the Chicago area, and because they wanted to amputate her leg. And then she had 105. Yeah, I'll make this quick.
Okay.
So how can we override the hospital and create laws to protect moving forward? You know, that the hospitals can't override a DNR or the DNI. They cannot override the power of attorney. And where do we go from to legally protect our loved ones, especially when they're, you know, when they're challenged like our kids are? And did Grace have, in her previous medical history, did she have, because she has Down syndrome, did she already have a compromised lung capacity? Did she have compromised her cardiac system? Was that already compromised? And they ignored those previous diagnoses.
Good question. Scott?
Yep. So Grace had no pre-existing condition, so she was not compromised at all. Regarding, you know, the much larger question that you have, what laws should be put in place? And I'm just going to be blunt. The answer is none, because they're already in place and they don't follow them. We cannot contract morality. Trying to fix this through the legal system is complete foolishness. Responsibility. You just have to take responsibility.
You're the guy that has to pay. The hospital has all this money behind them, right? Correct. You're the guy that's got to dig into his pocket and try to fight that monster.
Well, on top of that, the insurance companies, they by state statute, they have to have medical malpractice insurance. So the insurance companies paid their legal bills. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, so to try to fix this, you know, so people have approached me. Should we do Grace's Law? I'm not interested in even participating in Grace's Law because they're not going to follow it anyway. What's the reason? Because, you know, we grew up, Dave and I grew up in an era that we had differences of opinion. There was liberals and conservatives, but everybody operated in the rule box. The rule box is dead. The rule of law is dead. So the idea that we can use that system to fix this, anybody that tries that, I would just tell you, you are completely wasting your time.
Situational ethics, folks. I could do a whole story on that one, man. They've been doing that to us. Values clarification for two generations. Some things are wrong, but that's where it is, huh? Yeah, they were wrong, but Betty, come on in.
Hey, hello, Scott. How are you?
Hey, anyway, great to see you, Betty.
Nice seeing you. I just want to say that Grace was just a beautiful, a loving, caring, happy, a very independent individual, young lady, you know. And I love the reel that you had. So if you had a chance, you should share that reel, like of her little life story of all her pictures. I think that was so amazing. I was just so heartbroken what happened to her and then what you've been through. I've just been tear stained every time I hear it. But you're exposing evil. I have friends all over the country that say, oh, yeah, I've heard about that case. Well, I said, need to check into it. You need to watch the court case. I'll send it.
You know? They heard about it.
Well, hold on. I'm not done. But anyway, one is the real, and also, are you going to Supreme Court? Are you going to be going further, or are you kind of done going to court?
And on top of that, then, Scott, another question on top of that. Would you recommend somebody else filing a lawsuit? Go ahead.
Yeah, so I don't believe we're going to go any further, Betty. There's no process to go through the Supreme Court. We were hoping that we would get a judgment greater than $750,000. Because there's a state statute cap of $750,000. If we got a judgment more than $750,000, we would have been able to go to the Supreme Court to get the caps challenged. So that was part of the goal of the lawsuit. So that's gone now. As I said at the beginning, you know, unless God opens up the door to appeal, I mean, we don't plan on appealing. What was your second question, Betty?
Would you suggest somebody else?
Oh, yeah. Would you? So the answer to that question, I've been asked that a bunch of times. And the answer to that question is I would absolutely emphatically tell anybody interested in pursuing a lawsuit, do not do that. The only time you should do it is if God shows you that path and opens up the door. Otherwise, this system, I studied the law before entering into this. I mean, this is not where you get justice. It would be a complete waste. This lawsuit, I've aged 20 years in the last 3 years of this lawsuit. That's how it's all encompassing. You know, it's not my money. It's God's money. So I don't mind not, you know, spending the money. That's fine. But I mean, the reality is, it's all consuming. Why would anybody ever do this unless God called them to do it?
It's a coin flip anyway, right, Scott? It's a coin
flip. It's not. So here's the statistics. In Wisconsin, there's 27,000 approximately medical malpractice incidences a year. 84 of them go to trial and 3 win. Okay, so I mean, it's the odds of, you're not going to do this based on, I'm a businessman. This is the dumbest business decision I've ever made in my life. You know, you're not going to beat those odds.
Amen. JR, come on in.
Part of that aging that you've done, brother, is spiritual, and good for you. Good for you. I have a question for you. It's something that bothered me. When the judge dropped the charges against the nurse, the battery charges against the nurse.
Yes.
Was that in front of the jury? And could that be considered jury tampering?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, it was not in front of the jury.
Okay.
It was done after. So the judge was very good about those type of things. If there were any things that needed to be argued, outside of the jury, he would even excuse them mid mid-argument, just so that if it needed to be longer than just a sidebar where it, you know, everything's confidential. But then, you know, the people who are in the gallery and the people online were able to hear those arguments. And so, you know, there were some good things that people heard that the jury did not hear. And the battery argument was one of those.
Mm. Okay. And Coach, I want to remind you of something you said a long time ago. Your dad told you that he didn't want to go to the hospital because when you go to the hospital, you go to die.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
That's what he told me. And he did, by the way. Robbie, come on in. Got to unmute, Robbie. Mary Beth, go ahead.
I'm just going to say, you don't look like you aged 10 years, so.
You look good, Scott.
Yeah. You should see the before and after pictures.
You look rested, and you know, God gave you the strength to get through that. Just like your son committing suicide. You know, I have a grandson that committed suicide. And I also lost a son, so I understand what you've been through.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Amen. Not a club you want to be part of.
Not a part. That's right. Robbie, did you want to try to come in?
Yes, sir. I'm so sorry for your loss. The first thing that struck me was that you mentioned a COVID test. I'm hoping now that we all realize that the COVID test is a scam. Secondly, we should all know that the third cause of death in our country is the abuse of these prescription drugs, this pharmakia. And that's, you know, Satan's tool to steal, kill, and destroy. And finally, I would be very interested to understand or know about the history of this DNR. Because I'm sure that legally things have changed. And we've always thought of hospitals, the number one thing is to preserve life. I remember years ago hearing stories about people in comas for 5 years or more, and they would keep these people on support. And several times people came out of comas after all these years. The goal was to preserve life because it's valuable. So we see the history of what's happened to the beast system. Thank you.
So, Robbie, I want to move on. Scott, so Scott, thanks, Robbie. I didn't mean to cut you off there. So, Scott, what's your advice to the rest of us regarding what you just went through? And let's say I don't have Down syndrome daughter or grandchildren, but someone in my family does. What's advice, Scott?
Until you change your belief about the system, nothing's going to change. So the idea that we've been programmed that the system says first do no harm, that's a lie. The Hippocratic Oath is an oath to satanic gods. Once you see that, you can't unsee it, and your belief changes. So once your belief changes, your actions always follow your belief. So then what actions do you take? Well, you cannot have a doc. You should drop your medical insurance first, because then you get your critical thinking back. Second of all, you should get a doctor and nurse who does not accept Medicare and Medicaid, because if they accept Medicare and Medicaid, they're bought. So now you start getting control of your health back, and you realize, okay, now I'm the one in charge of my health. Robbie mentioned pharmakia. Pharmakia is the number one cause of death. Revelation 18:23 says that Mystery Babylon is going to deceive the world with pharmakia. So, you know, the first cause of death is heart disease, second cancer, third is medical malpractice. Well, all three of those are medical malpractice, because the pharmakia for heart disease is the statin, which causes a heart attack and causes Alzheimer's. The standard of care for cancer. Cancer is caused by them poisoning our water, poisoning our food, poisoning our air. And then the standard of care for cancer is chemo. So that's pharmakia. So, I mean, pharmakia is the leading cause of death in our country. And until people see that, they're never going to change.
Man, oh, man. Boom. Boom. That's all we can say is boom. And friends, we've been programmed. Whether you want to believe this or not, the medical system is designed to make money. Isn't that true, Scott? Didn't most doctors go into medicine to make money, not to really take care? Oh, they want to take care of people. It's about money, is it not, Scott?
It's about money. And, you know, when the going gets tough and they realize what's going on, are they going to stop the money? And, you know, they've got million-dollar mortgages, a couple of Mercedes. Are they going to stop the money train and do what's right? Or are they going to toe the line of the system?
Yeah, she's just a useless eater, right? She's mentally retarded. Nobody, we don't really. Sadly, that's the attitude, is it not? That's what we're dealing with.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Scott, thanks. You're a hero, man. Hang in there with us, brother. We're going to do a little bit of an after show here. Folks, trust in God. That's all it is, man. Not doctors. God bless you, Scott. See you tomorrow, folks.